Now, let's get into the list. PJ Haggerty. All right, Tim, I'm curious to know from your perspective. So we get the news that PJ has withdrawn from the NBA draft, which did not really come as much of a surprise to me. I mean, I think he went up there hoping there was going to be a team that said they'd take him in the second round. I don't think he heard that. So after it was becoming clear that that was probably not going to be an option, then you started to hear, okay, well, is he looking back at North Carolina State? Then North Carolina State withdraws. Then there was some, at least social media scuttlebutt. PJ was showing himself in Tigers jerseys on Instagram and whatnot. But then we find out yesterday that he is headed to Kansas State, and his father, Patrick, confirmed that to our buddy Jason Munns over at the Commercial Appeal. So originally, he was seeking a deal of $4 million or more. I don't know if I'd say reportedly, but the conventional wisdom is that Memphis had an offer on the table for him at $3 million, at least early on in the process. You can do the math that by going to Kansas State, at reportedly, according to Jeff Goodman, somewhere in between $2 and $2.5 million, that $3 million offer did not, at least was not on the table, because I think if it were, that's where he'd be headed. I guess when you take a look at it from the outside looking in, I ask you the question, did PJ make a mistake?
I don't think so. I'm going to answer your question with a question.
All right.
Could he have got any more out of Memphis this year than he did last year? Because by all accounts, and we talked a lot about Memphis basketball, obviously, here on this show, he was amazing. He was an All-American, and they made it to the NCAA tournament. They won the AAC. They had a great non-con. They go out to Maui. Could he have upped that even more? And I know, you know, Mark, your former co-host, you know, pointed out, you know, just kind of the thought process of, are players going to regret not becoming icons at schools? Well, my question to you and to Memphis fans is, if he stays for another year, can he get to that level in just 2 years? And if you're PJ Haggerty, and obviously he's played at what? TCU, Tulsa, Memphis, and now Kansas State.
Correct.
Is there more appeal to go back and play your final year of college and play Kansas on Big Monday, to play, you know, big time games on a night in, night out basis? And this is no knock on Memphis, right? Memphis played enormous non-con games, but as we discussed during the season, there's a little bit of a drawback when you're playing a Temple game on a Thursday night, right?
On ESPN Plus.
Right. It's not the same juice. So as much as it pains Memphis fans, I'm sure, I don't think he did make a mistake, even though Kansas State was a worse team, in my opinion, than Memphis a year ago.
So, could he have gotten more? I mean, I think the first thing you'd have to say is he could have gotten more money, because obviously, like, everyone keeps doing the thing, well, he's taking a pay cut. No, he's going to be making more money than he made at Memphis next year at Kansas State. So he's still going to be getting a pay raise. Did he get the best deal possible? No. What he would have been playing for, and the question that I don't know, is maybe he got up to Chicago and they said, hey, we need to. We know the Memphis non-conference schedule was tough, but we need to see you do it in a real league for an entire season. And maybe they. I'm speculating. I don't know that they said that, but I don't think it's insane to think that that message was conveyed.
We
to him.
Need you to see you play Houston and Texas Tech and Kansas in a three-game stretch.
Yeah, over the course of the entire season, that can wear you down. Like, we need to see how you respond to that.
Right. I mean, look, the Big 12 is, while it's kind of all over the place from a college football standpoint, you look at the big boys, and Houston just got some good news today. Is they're going to get, Uzan? He's coming back. You know, BYU's got unlimited amounts of money, and they've got the number one kid in the country, AJ, what is it, Dynasta or something like that. Arizona's always
he's AJ to me.
Yeah, whatever. The big dude, the number one recruit, he's going there. Iowa State, it doesn't seem like they're going anywhere. I mean, the Big 12 is legit, man. And it stinks to hear it, I'm sure, knowing that. And I think, and I'm curious what Memphis fans are thinking today, because I was going to ask you this, and maybe I'll just ask it anyhow. Is this, was this news kind of inevitable? Like, was there hope but reality that he was probably gone? Because I think, and I'm not going to say this is a good thing for Memphis, because it's not. You're losing an All-American. But I think if you're a Memphis fan, knowing that your offer was still competitive has to make you feel decent in the sense that it's not like you're getting blown out.
This is true.
Because
at one time, they made the best offer.
Right. And it's like the kid just wanted to go to a Big 12 school. Now, we don't know the reasoning, but I think we have a good educated guess, right? He went to the workouts up in Chicago, and probably some of the feedback was, hey, we want to see you do it against better competition now that you're at this level, right? He did it 4 years ago at TCU, but now that you're at an All-American level, we want to see you do it again. So I think the small, small hope, I guess, would be that Memphis is still competitive from an NIL standpoint. It's just that he wanted to go to a better conference, and that's just something right now Memphis has no say in the matter over.
I think the fans that were paying attention, I don't think this was a surprise, because when you started to see the amount of guards that Memphis was adding to the roster, I think it became clear, okay, even if maybe some people were holding out hope, well, PJ hasn't committed anywhere yet, he could still come back. I think most people that were paying attention realized that's probably not in the cards, and that Memphis had rationally moved on and they were spending their money elsewhere. What I think he would have been playing for this year in terms of Memphis fans, he's going to get downgraded, not from like a, I don't think there's going to be Memphis fans that are going to be tuned into Kansas State games just openly rooting against him. But what he, by not coming back, it makes him feel even more of a mercenary. Mm-hmm. And so despite being an All-American, like he's going to be, I think he would be behind even Kendrick Davis in terms of a one-year guy at Memphis. So he could have played for the opportunity staying around. If they could have gotten to a second weekend, that would have been something that hasn't happened since 2009. But again, we talked about all the things that had to fall in place for Memphis just to get a 5 seed this year. Like repeating that, like, I don't know what the likelihood of it is. I'm not saying it's impossible, but you know, you needed not only to have an outstanding non-conference schedule, you needed everyone else to hold up their end of the bargain for the most part, which most of them did. I just don't know how often that happens. And then can Memphis still roll through the league? I think that's honestly what I bank on the most, just because when you look at the rest of the league, I don't know how seriously anyone's really competing. So that I can buy. But what he would have been playing for is having a higher standing amongst the fan base. But we're not talking like that it would have somehow elevated him to the level of like Derrick Rose or anyone from the national championship team. Like, no, he would not have even been at that level.
So big picture, knowing that the competitive level was still there from an NIL front, but ultimately, and once again, we're speculating, but the speculation is they went to Kansas State because he wanted to be in a better basketball conference. And there's no denying the Big 12 is better than the AAC. Does this reopen fans' thoughts of, obviously the pipe dream, as we've talked about, would be the ACC, right? That would be a perfect landing spot. Does it reopen the curiosity? And I'm not saying just one player leaving should do this, but does it reopen the thought process of, if the Pac-12, who by the way is still not done, I don't know what they're doing.
I don't know if they do.
And they're starting in 2026 and they need more teams. If the Pac-12 comes back to Memphis, is there any more consideration, or am I going a little bit too far here?
I think it solely depends on what's the deal. You know, if they come back with something that resembles the first offer, which was basically here's $2.5 million,
right?
Now go pay your way out to come play us. I mean, I definitely think even fans that were on the fence about the Pac-12, I think last year it really sunk in. We have to figure out a way out of this league. Like, there's so many games that feel meaningless, and you know, when your whole season is wrapped up into non-conference basketball and then holding on for dear life for 3 months, like, it's not really a fun way to be a fan. I think the problem, though, is
who could be a legitimate, and I didn't mean to kind of curve this into a different conversation, but I think – The thing that makes the most sense is who would be a good, who would be a conference that would be willing to house Memphis minus basketball and football? Because if you could be in the Pac-12 for football and basketball, and then the Ohio Valley for, and maybe that's not good enough, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
Sun Belt, in terms of the other sports?
Sun Belt probably wouldn't, I don't know, I assume they wouldn't be willing to do that, but like, if you're Memphis, I don't know, do you reach out to the Big East, but then your football program, where do they go, right? Like,
so I'm not trying to avoid the question. I'm saying it's a tough question because I don't know this information.
Right.
Here's the information I don't know. Because no one will say this out loud. We opened the entire show about the college football playoff. And let's be real. A huge part of this is, where's this headed by 2030?
Mm-hmm.
And where's everyone going to be? And so what I don't know with Memphis is always publicly positioned that it's about all athletics, not just football, not just basketball. Is there some type of hybrid? I don't know, because then the other problem is like, how willing are certain leagues to make concessions? How does the payouts work? Like, I understand these are details that, like, well, you could figure it out, but it's like, well, these are the details that make deals fall apart. Like, in the end, I think Memphis was open to going to the new Pac-12 until they put the offer in front of them, and right. They're like, well, no, we're not going to do that. Like, that's insane. That would bankrupt us. And so I understand when people say, well, just figure out the home and then figure out the details. Like, well, the details really do matter, everyone. Like,
right.
That's the point of the deal that you're trying to make.
Like, if Memphis could go, I'd be curious, and I don't know if the SoCon would go for it, but let's just use them for example. If Memphis was able to strike a deal with the Southern Conference, which is like UT Chattanooga, East Tennessee, Samford, et cetera.
Furman, I think, is over there.
Memphis plays them in the non-revenue sports, and Memphis football and Memphis men's and women's basketball go to the Pac-12. I mean, I think that would be ideal, right? Because then you're
I think the only problem, though, is, okay,
but
now
but the SoCon be like, no, we want your basketball program, right? And maybe you could strike a deal where, you know, Memphis plays home and homes against two of them in basketball or something like that. I don't know. I think we're kind of getting to the point where the creativity's got to start to jump. And we saw this with Northern Illinois, right? They're going to the Mountain West just for football. And the Mac was like, well, kick rocks. You're not going to be in here. Like, okay. So they went to, I think, the Horizon League for everything else. But that includes their basketball program. And obviously Memphis would not be sending their basketball program to the Southern Conference. So I'm just thinking out loud. But I'm curious if...
Well, I think in the back of everyone's mind is... And I would say...
If Clemson and Miami leave, or
right.
If Clemson and Florida State leave.
Yeah. What happens to the ACC? Or in the back of everyone's mind is... Well, what happens if, like, let's say that my game theory is correct and that I think we're now hearing public posturing of the SEC and the Big Ten getting really close to saying, we're just going to go do this by ourselves. You can figure out the rest for yourselves. Are you better off waiting for that to break up and then finding a home with whoever gets left out? Or are you better off proactively trying to find a spot and then maybe hoping that, okay, all these spots can't be filled, so they're going to have to take someone. Like, it's kind of a game of, all right, how is everything moving on the chessboard and trying to figure out what the most advantageous spot for you is? And that, to me, is a complicated question because my suspicion says if we are headed to a new world of the SEC and the Big Ten, well, I don't think it's just going to be the 18. I don't think it's just going to be the 18 Big Ten schools and the 16 SEC schools. I think clearly Clemson, Miami, Florida State, they're trying to get involved. Like, North Carolina is going to get involved. Like, I do think people are wondering, okay, is that going to be an actual avenue to get involved? And I don't know the answer to that. My suspicion says it's going to be an avenue for some schools to get involved, but it's not going to be like a, okay, who wants to play? Raise your hand.
Yeah, and if that does inevitably happen, you got to imagine, I don't know. I mean, things are complicated with TV deals, but you got to imagine the rest of the schools are like, what are we doing here? Let's go regional. Let's figure this thing out. But who knows, man? It's messy. It's, you know, kind of back to what we said about expansion, like, or yeah, about the expanded playoff. Like, I'm still going to love this sport, but it's sucking it out a little bit. That being said, Oregon, Ohio State last October, kind of cool to see that, you know?
No, I mean, to me, the problem with the sport right now is everything sucks except for game day. And the question that I have is kind of like what you were talking about at the start of the program. How much can game day just keep saving how much everything else sucks? Maybe it's forever. I don't know. You know what I mean? Maybe it's just possible that there's so few games and we love sports so much that that's, in the end, that's always just going to be the ultimate trump card. But I don't know. All right, NBA playoffs. Okay, so we got a big game four tonight. And I know it's a game four that even if the Knicks win, all right, it's still best of three, and that means nobody's won a home game. But doesn't this weirdly feel like I feel like this is the game that kind of decides the series, because it feels like to me, if the Knicks win this one, obviously the injuries on the Indiana front matter, but it's like, if Indiana wins tonight, it's like, okay, I think they've got this thing wrapped up.
Yep.
But it feels like if New York wins, like, I've now completely swung and, like, I want to rip up my Indiana series price.
No, it does. And it's funny when you think back to New York and Boston, and the odds weren't as what they are now. So series price, Indiana's still a pretty significant favorite to win the series. They're a favorite tonight, around 2.5 points. But if you think back to the New York-Boston series, which was New York wins games 1 and 2,
yep,
right? The comebacks. Then Boston beats them in game 3. And we were all, I was for sure,
like, thinking, this series is over. Okay.
This is done.
That
all
was
right.
Cute.
Yeah, that was nice. Good job, New York. Cool on your comebacks. But let the big boys take care of business. And, you know, Boston was up double digits in the first half. I made a really dumb bet that Boston would win the Eastern Conference middle of that game. And then, obviously, they blew the lead. Jason Tatum gets hurt, and the rest is history. I'm with you, man. If New York wins tonight, buckle up. I mean, I'm not going to say Indiana has to win, because this team has been, is it fair to say, more resilient than New York this year? I mean, this postseason, they've had 3 comebacks of 9-plus or 7-plus in the last minute of 3 games. I know New York is the first team ever, or the first team in the play-by-play era going back to 98, to have 3 20-plus point comebacks, which they've now done. But I kind of feel like Indiana has to win tonight. Even as stupid as that sounds, because Indiana won both games at the Garden, it does kind of feel like things are getting a little tight, right? You lost the lead. Maybe,
but
New York.
Don't you feel better if you had some kind of feeling of what Neesmith's, like, what's the status of Neesmith?
Yeah. Yep. No, totally. Yeah, we don't know, right? He came back into the game, but that was that adrenaline, right? And
I presume it was Tordal, but
adrenaline's a hell of a drug,
yeah,
too,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But yeah, whatever it was, yeah, I mean, look, the depth of Indiana is what is sets them apart, right? And, you know, you think back to their slow start to the season. He was hurt, Aaron Nesmith was. And look, he played the game of his life in game one to win that game. Let me ask you this. Is 2-1 Indiana the right
I don't know what
series?
The right... I actually think you can make a case that any of the possible outcomes makes sense. If you want to say the Knicks should be up 3-0, I'm fine with that. If you want to say the Pacers should be up 3-0, I'm fine with that. If you want to say the Knicks should be up 2-1, I'm fine with that. Like, or what we have, which is 2-1, like, I'm kind of fine. It's been every game's just basically been a coin flip.
Look, I think this series, and if you add in last night, this has been some really good stuff, man.
Like, this has been by far the best watch of the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Game one was all-time, like all-time. And if the Indiana Pacers don't win this series, you know, the chokes, the choking sign will become an all-time meme. But that comeback, all-time. Karl Anthony Towns, who had been essentially crapped on because of his defense, rightfully so, has an all-time fourth quarter. Jalen Brunson's dealing with foul trouble. And
I think they benched him. I think they did, and they didn't, right?
They were like, Miles McBride's doing okay.
It felt to me like they know when we have Brunson and Cat on the floor together, we cannot stop them. So we have to kind of stagger it. And then I think the foul trouble helped. But like, and obviously, when you got down to the last 90 seconds, like, all right, we need the bucket. He comes right back in.
And he gets it.
And like, okay, well, we got to get the ball in bounds. But like, I don't know. This game to me just feels like, as someone who's sitting here with a Pacers ticket, man, they better win this one. Because if not, I just feel like it swings all the way back to New York.
Look, I've been pretty consistent on this series, and my stance has been I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
The only bet that I made was over 5.5 games, and when Indiana went up 2-0 and led by 20 in the first half, I'm like, God.
I did think there were a lot of people that were prematurely burying the Knicks on Sunday.
Oh,
my. So I was like, have we learned nothing from these playoffs?
Freezing cold takes had a field day on Sunday, man. It was just like take after take. I'm just glad I stayed off Twitter on Sunday night. I was like, I don't need to say anything. And I'm watching it. And I'm like, yeah, they're chipping. And is this really going to happen? And that's what's, I mean, these two teams, man, to think about what these two teams have done this postseason, where Indiana became what? The previous teams down 7 with a minute to go were like 1-1600. They've won 3 in this postseason, and the Knicks have now come back from 3 different 20-point deficits. Like, these two teams, they belong in this Eastern Conference Finals. They are meant for each other, and I just hope, removing my betting ticket, which is over 5.5 games, like, I want 7 games. I wanted 7 games to start this series. And this series felt to me like it was destined for 7 games, to be in the Garden with Reggie Miller, last TNT game, all that. And these two teams deserve to be in a game 7. So I don't know if New York has to win tonight or if Indiana has to win tonight, but it does kind of feel like the discussions tomorrow, if Indiana loses, are going to be a wild overreaction. And I think, I'll be honest, man, if Indiana loses tonight, I think that might be the time to strike on Indiana.
Go right back to them.
Because they're as resilient as any team I've seen, man. They almost, and I feel like they were uncomfortable being up 2-1.
Yeah, no, they were, it was like, this is weird, we're playing with a lead. Like,
we're supposed to be the team that everyone craps on. Like, I've got a couple Pacer fans in my life, and like, my whole timeline is just like, oh, the disrespect and the New York, everyone thinks New York's going to win. And then you're up 2-0, and it's like, Oh, people are giving us proper due? I don't like this very much.
This is weird. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Brett McMurphy joins the program. Let's find out what's all happening with the SEC down at spring meetings. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Brett McMurphy is the college football insider for the Action Network. Follow him on Twitter on X, @Brett_McMurphy. Brett, we got Tim with us out in Vegas. I guess let's start here. In your mind, what was the most significant thing that Greg Sankey said the last 2 days?
Oh, wow. Reading between the lines, he's tired of being questioned about the SEC's motives on what they're going to do. In a nutshell, he's going to do what's best for the SEC. And whether depends on if you're an SEC fan or not, whether you like that answer. But if that means there may be collateral damage throughout college football because the SEC is going to do what's best for them, whether it's future scheduling, size of the playoff, et cetera, et cetera, I think he cares. He doesn't want to demolish college football or lay a blowtorch to it. But also his responsibility is to his 16 presidents in the SEC, and that's his number one priority. And a lot of people don't like that, but that's the reality of it. What that means, long term, we don't know that. That's what we're trying to figure out. That's what everybody's trying to figure out. And there's a number of moving parts regarding the college football playoff, the selection committee, how many conference games the SEC goes to. Do they stay at 8? Do they go to 9? It's kind of all dependent on each other. So it's hard to say specifically what will happen, but certainly we do know that there will be change. It's just how much and how soon.
Brett, it seems inevitable that we're headed to 16. The other inevitable, well, I want to ask you, is it inevitable we're headed to 4 auto bids for the SEC and 4 for the Big Ten, from what you understand?
Yeah, Tim. I mean, that is what the SEC and the Big Ten, that is their preferred model right now. I reported earlier today, the ACC and Big 12 has proposed to the SEC and the Big Ten multiple times on a 16-team format where it would simply be the 5 conference champions, 4 the Power 4 conference champs, automatic bids, and then 1 from the Group 5. And then the remaining 11 teams in the playoff would be at-large teams. So basically the highest-ranked teams would get in. The SEC and Big Ten do not support that model. They prefer the guaranteed spots for at least 4 of their teams. Ultimately, the SEC and the Big Ten have all the power. And you can say, well, why don't the other conferences, hold them to the fire? Why don't they call their bluff? Because the SEC and the Big Ten could say, okay, you know what, guys? We're going to go over here. We're going to start our own playoff. And people are like, well, no, they wouldn't do that. Well, actually, they would and they could. And, oh, by the way, it would generate double or triple the revenue of a playoff with the remaining conferences that are not the SEC and the Big Ten. Ultimately, I don't think that's what they want to do. But when you have all the power, either one of you guys are negotiating a deal at your place of employment. You have all the power, and you want A, B, and C, and your employers only offering you A and B, and you can go get A, B, and C somewhere else, you're going to say, you know what? No thanks, I'm going to go over here. That's kind of what is going on with the SEC and the Big Ten. And the biggest thing, guys, is that I've talked to a bunch of ADs here this week at the SEC meetings, and they're saying it publicly, they're saying it privately. Their concern is the selection committee falls into this narrative that an 11-1 team is better than a 9-3 team because they have 2 more wins. They don't take into account strength of schedule. They don't take into account how much a team gets worn down playing in a stronger conference. They simply fall back on Team A won 11 games, Team B won 9 games, so Team A should get in. And obviously when that happens, Alabama doesn't make the playoff, Ole Miss doesn't make the playoff, South Carolina doesn't make the playoff. I'm not saying I agree with them,
right,
but that's how they feel.
Brett McMurphy joining us right now here on the program. He's down there at the SEC meetings. I posed this question, Brett, earlier in the show. I think I know the answer, but I'm just going to ask you from the people that you've talked about. Let's say SMU loses by 3 touchdowns to Clemson. Alabama gets in over SMU, which we all think probably would have happened if that was a blowout in the ACC championship. We're still having these conversations, right? Even if Alabama gets in, we're still questioning whether Ole Miss should have got in over Indiana, right? So it's not that short-sighted in the eyes of the SEC, all because Alabama got left out for SMU?
No, you're absolutely right. And you bring up a good point. And look, I want to be clear. I'm not like pro-SEC. I'm not anti-SEC. I'll be a lawyer. I'll play either side of it. But you bring up a great point in Indiana, and I love what Cignetti's done there. But Tim, college football as well as anybody. There's 136 teams. I would guess that probably 70 teams, maybe that's high. I don't know. Maybe not. We'll say 50 teams could have played Indiana's schedule and have the same record. They didn't play anybody, but they won a lot of games. Is that a top 12 team that should be in a playoff? I don't know. You could argue it is or it isn't. And so that's the biggest issue for the SEC, is when they see an Indiana team with 0 quality wins get into the college football playoff. When they see SMU get in, that I think they're a separate category because they did win the regular season championship. And the regular season champions, whether we like it or not, there should be some value to that. And so I think that's one reason why you're hearing a lot of speculation about different conferences saying, well, if we're going to go to 16 teams, we're no longer going to have a conference championship game because we don't want our regular season champion to lose in the conference championship game and get kicked out. Instead, we'll have play-in games between our number 3 and 6 teams in the conference, and the winner of that can advance to the playoffs. So you're right, Tim. Even if Alabama would have got in and SMU wouldn't have got in, then the argument would have moved to Ole Miss or South Carolina versus Indiana instead of SMU versus Alabama.
Brett, one thing that's never really made a lot of sense to me, I don't feel like I've gotten a satisfactory answer, so maybe you can help me out on this. Up until, I feel like, last fall, and really towards the selection process, Greg Sankey was basically on the record as saying, like, I want a 12-team playoff to be 12 at-large teams. And now we've swung so drastically over to the whole stick-up is the automatic qualifiers. In your mind, what has changed? Because it's not like that to me, like, that's a pretty drastic position change in a very short period of time. I'm not saying you're not entitled to change your mind. Like, I'm not going to accuse him of flip-flopping, but to me, like, that's a pretty significant change in a short period of time. Why do you think that is?
Well, one, you're accurate. And if it was up to Greg Sankey, the top 16 teams would be in the playoffs, ranked 1 through 16. That has not changed. And I just mentioned earlier that I reported, you know, that's one of the proposals, the 5 automatic qualifiers and 11 at-large bids. That hasn't changed. What has changed is how the selection committee values teams. And again, we're looking at last year only when we went from 4 to 12. What did the SEC learn last year? Is that the committee values wins versus inferior competition over a team with a lesser record that played a tougher schedule. So that is their so I guess I hope I'm answering your question.
Well, yeah,
he hasn't changed. He's concerned that they're not going to rank the correct 16 best teams.
So I guess so
teams may be penalized for more losses because they played a tougher schedule. So now they may not be considered in the top 16, where an 11-1 Indiana that has no top 25 wins will be considered a top 16 team. So that's his biggest issue. Not saying it shouldn't be 1 through 16. It's how do we get to those 16?
Yeah, I guess so why make this drastic proposal of the automatic qualifiers? Why not propose getting rid of the committee? Like, I think, you know, I think if you went to SP Plus, right, as a rating system, he would have
or
got
Vegas.
Yeah, or Vegas.
Yeah,
would he get,
I mean,
why?
Vegas
why?
Ratings, yeah.
It well, feels like that
challenge.
Would be a better.
That's right,
cut.
Baby. It all comes back to Vegas.
Well, no, it's just like I feel like
I'm
you could
Vegas, baby.
You could have basically. I feel like there were other workarounds other than what they're proposing, and I want to be clear. I'm exactly like you are. I'm pretty agnostic towards. I think the SEC has made some valid points. Like, I'm in the camp of I don't think going to Oklahoma in November is the same as going to Evanston in November. Like, I think no matter if it's a 6-6 Oklahoma team, like, I think it's tougher.
Right.
But, like, at the same time, I also acknowledge if there was an 11-1 Big Ten team, I don't care how soft the schedule was, that team was getting in. Like, I felt like I was kind of, like, stuck in the middle. It felt to me like there were other ways to work around this other than coming up with a system that feels like it's pretty unpopular.
Well, the biggest thing is we went from 4 to 12. So when you're in 4, it's pretty easy to pick the top 4. Or
yeah.
At least you're going to, you know, maybe, okay, who got screwed 4 or 5. But you're pretty well set. You know, we know who those top 4 teams are. I mean, I don't think there was an argument this in the last year who the top 4 teams were. You know, the seedings were different because of the automatic bids and whatever. But Texas, Penn State, Ohio State, Notre Dame, those were the 4. Oregon, my bad. Yeah, those are the 4. Everyone is pretty well set. So, but then when you get further down, then it gets more challenging. The biggest issue with simply saying, let's go by the power rating. Let's go with the Vegas power rating. Who's going to be favored on a neutral field? Give me the best 16 teams. I agree those are the best 16 teams. The biggest problem I have with that is, and Tim knows this, you know this, Alabama can lose four games and still be one of the best 16 teams in the country. Florida last year, a large part of this season, they're power rated, Tim may know off the top of his head. I'm going to say top 20 the entire season. They were never more than a game over 500 the entire season. Why? Because their schedule was so incredibly hard. Power rated wise, they were in the realm of the top 16. So at some point, wins and losses have to matter. And that's the thing, is how do you balance that out with wins and losses have to matter, strength of schedule, and a limited schedule size. Mike Elko said this, Kirby Smart said this. Nobody has a problem when 13 of 16 SEC basketball teams get into the NCAA tournament. Well, some people may have a problem, but you have a bigger, you know, you have
sample
a bigger
size,
pool, sample size to take from, where you've got 12 games and you're playing two tomato cans, you're playing one tough non-conference, and then you're playing a conference schedule. That's the biggest challenge, where you simply can't say, let's get rid of the committee and let's go back to a computer model, let's go back to the power ratings. I still say this, I mentioned this to an AD earlier today, put on my tombstone. The problem with the BCS, when we got rid of the BCS computers, was not the BCS computers. As screwed up as it was with the AP poll, all the different computer rankings, the number one biggest flaw of the BCS computer rankings was what? They could only pick two teams. That's what it was. If they could have picked four teams, we would have never had a selection committee. But they could only pick two. So what? Guess what? One year they spit out Alabama and LSU, and everybody went, ape, you know what?
Yep.
And that's where we said, we got to get rid of the BCS. This is flawed, whatever. Now, what was flawed is, what if we could only have picked two teams last year for a playoff? Nobody would have agreed on that.
We would have agreed probably on Oregon, and then who else? I don't. Georgia with a backup quarterback. The computer can't account for that. Yeah,
You could make.
It wouldn't have been Notre Dame, Ohio State. That's for sure.
and then perfect example. Oregon, the clear cut number one. I know we saw what happened in the Rose Bowl, but they had the toughest road to the championship game. Why? Because of automatic bids, and because Ohio State fell into eighth spot, and they did. You know, that's so asinine. Fortunately, they got rid of it for this year, where we'll have the straight seeding, where you're not going to have a Boise State and an Arizona State seeded six or seven spots higher than they should be because they won their conference. They'll be slotted correctly within the seeding. Look, there still may be upsets, but I think it'll be a truer test of how the rankings play out or the regular season played out.
I can't wait to see what we overreact to next December, and then we have to immediately knee-jerk fix that too. Brett,
next December? What about just wait till tomorrow?
Yeah. You're 100% right. Brett, thank you so much. The banana daiquiri at the Hilton Sandestin, elite. Just a little pro tip there.
This is like my 12th time here, so yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. What's your room number again?
Just put it on Big Jeff Wright. Yeah, he'll take care of the bill. I think he's still got a corporate account there.
I usually go with the Underhill, so I'll go with that one.
Thank you, my man. Appreciate your time.
Take care.
That is Brett McMurphy of the Action Network. We come back, we'll tell your story next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Tim, for today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. We got to go to one of the all-time greats of the game, the King, LeBron James. On his Mind the Game podcast with Steve Nash, he said that he'd never seen the type of camera that they used in the Wolves series to try and prove that he'd fouled Anthony Edwards, implying that, well, they brought in a new camera angle just to get him out of the playoffs. I don't know if LeBron knows how this thing works. They would have preferred to bring in a camera angle that would have kept him in the playoffs. So, never change, LeBron. Never, ever change. Want to thank Brett McMurphy and Jaleel Willis for being on the program. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Tim, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.